Teaching meditation can be a deeply rewarding experience. Help others improve their mental and emotional well-being, reduce stress, improve focus, increase self-awareness and self-regulation, all while deepening your own practice and understanding. Join acclaimed author, Buddhist teacher, and Emmy Award-winning musician David Nichtern on Tuesday, May 28th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time for a free online discussion on teaching meditation in Dharma Moon's renowned mindfulness meditation teacher training program. Get certified by Dharma Moon to teach meditation, lead group practice sessions, and work with individual students. Visit dharmamoon.com/beherenow for more info and to reserve your spot for the free online event with David Nichtern on May 28th.
I'm Rachel, the creative director for Ram Dass's Love Server Member Foundation, and I'd like to welcome you to our Inner Academy, a virtual Dharma hall where our family of wisdom teachers will help you navigate your daily life by bringing ancient wisdom into a modern context. With over 200 hours of audio and video teachings, meditations, and practices from teachers like Ram Dass, Krishna Dass, Sharon Salzberg, Jack Kornfield, Roshi Joan Halifax, Joseph Goldstein, and many more, the Inner Academy is your core resource for finding balance, presence, and navigating the ups and downs of your daily life. The Inner Academy has guidance for every step of your journey. Choose from an annual or monthly membership and gain access to past and future courses, retreat replays, virtual community, and much more. If you've been familiar with Love Server Member Foundation for a while, you'll know that most of our offerings are given freely or on a sliding scale basis. So when you subscribe to the Inner Academy, you're paying it forward and bolstering our ability to continue creating accessible offerings for all in the future, as Ram Dass wished for us to do. Be here now and start your journey with Ram Dass's Inner Academy today. For more, visit ramdass.org/innerAcademy.
And I think this practice of the bell of mindfulness can be used in your office every time the telephone rings. That is called telephone meditation that many people in Europe and in North America have already practiced and love it. So telephone meditation consists in staying where you are and breathe, using the ring as a bell of mindfulness, and breathing in, breathing out, quiet.
Welcome to the Be Here Now guest podcast. This series features a collection of teachings and conversations centered around mindfulness, spiritual growth, and living a life in balance. Each week, our diverse network of guest teachers and hosts offer up wisdom and practices from a different spiritual path and perspective. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit beherenownetwork.com/donate.
Welcome to Under the Teaching Tree, a guest podcast that comes from the Ojai Foundation, a jewel of a sanctuary in the Upper Ojai Valley of Southern California. I'm Jacqueline Dobrinska, the Director of Outreach and Education for Love Serve Remember Foundation, and I worked with the Ojai Foundation to help bring this series of lectures to you. So I want to give you a little bit of the rich and interesting history about how these came to be. And I'm going to do that by asking you to relax, settle, open, breathe, and imagine. Imagine you're sitting in the shade of an oak tree in the sweet California desert. Around you, between the mountain peaks of the Topatopas, is a special valley, one that was once an inland sea and homeland still to the Chumash people. Under the shade of this oak, it's almost as if you can hear words of wisdom wafting in the wind. This is the echo of four decades of teachers who stood under an oak tree in that desert, sharing life experiences and age-old wisdom with masters like Roshi Joan Halifax, Thich Nhat Hanh, Joanna Macy, Maladoma Somay, Joseph Campbell, Jean Houston, and many, many others, including Native American, Tibetan, Zen, and Judo Christian teachers. It also included our beloved Ram Dass. You see, almost 100 years ago, 450 acres of this valley was preserved by Theosophist Anne Besant, who wanted to build an eclectic community that was devoted to art and agriculture, education, and enriching cross-cultural spiritual experiences. In 1975, the Ojai Foundation, which was originally known as the Human Dimension Institute West, bit of a mouthful, they took up residency on 40 acres of Annie's preserved land. And their goal was to foster practices that awakened connection to self, circle, and the greater good. They emphasized things that were slowly reemerging at the time, things like counsel, rites of passage, land stewardship, and wisdom traditions from diverse cultures and lineages from around the world. More and more voices began to share under that tree, and it eventually became known affectionately as the teaching tree. Counsel emerged as a practice. It was one that allowed convergent and divergent points of view simultaneously. And I think it's something we're all needing to learn and embrace in this day and age. In this practice, each person learns to offer their personal story from their heart, and we each listen with our hearts and with full attention. Unfortunately, in 2017, things changed for the Ojai Foundation. The Thomas Fire, which was the largest wildfire in California at that time, it kissed the ground. And the foundation needed a new way to move ahead. They're doing that in many and various ways right now. And this podcast, Under the Teaching Tree from the Ojai Foundation, is one way that they can bring forward some of the foundation's rich history to share it with others, a larger audience, maybe one that wouldn't fit under that tree. It's also a way for the foundation to express its immense gratitude to those who gifted this timeless wisdom, these practices, and really this guidance for these times. But it is important to note that these talks represent an earlier era of the foundation's history and legacy. So it doesn't necessarily reflect all of the current values, mission, and vision. But still, much of what is shared is perennial wisdom, things that really speak to our hearts and our minds today. So we invite you to settle in to listen to each of these podcasts as that council of voices, as a group of individuals rooted in shared care for the earth and in that human capacity to listen, to love, and to place oneself in service of something larger. We hope that the wisdom that's shared here will be heard by those who are seeking it, and that you are nourished well by it. Today's lecture is from Thich Nhat Hanh, who came to the Ojai Foundation for at least two significant retreats. As you listen, you can imagine that you are walking with him in that slow and careful manner, listening to him with those mindful words. His gentleness helps us remember that peaceful social activism is not necessarily separate from contemplative practices. In case you don't know who he is, it is said that Thich Nhat Hanh writes with the voice of the Buddha. He was a Vietnamese Zen master, poet, best-selling author, and peace activist, and he's known as the father of mindfulness. When he was the chairman of the Vietnamese Buddhist peace delegation during the Vietnam War, he was nominated by Dr. Martin Luther King for the Nobel Peace Prize. In 1966, he visited the United States in Europe on a peace mission and was unable to return to his native land. In 1982, he founded Plum Village, a meditation community in southwestern France, where he taught and gardened and aided refugees worldwide. Earlier this year, in January of 2022, he left his body. Yet his influence on Western minds and practices and lives will ripple throughout many, many eras to come. In this episode, he's talking about using the activities in our daily lives, actually the distractions of our daily lives, as these incredible opportunities to create more mindfulness. more understanding, more care, and more compassion. You know, sometimes his accent can be hard to understand. So if you are having any trouble, please visit Be Here Now Network on youtube.com so you can see the translations as you listen. And with that, let us turn our hearts, minds, and attention to the incredible wisdom transmitted from this great wisdom keeper.
You know that in my country, each village has a temple, just like here, a church. And there is a huge bell hanging in the tower, in the bell tower. And the bell is for the whole village to practice. Not only for the monks and nuns. And every time the people hear the bell, they are supposed to practice. Stop the talking, stop the thinking, and go back to their breathing. It has been like that for 2,000 years. But sometimes people forget. They think that the bell is to tell us time to go and cook and do something like that. But if you practice the bell of mindfulness to go back to yourself and breathing, you will like it because it helps you to be yourself, to be alive. And as in the West, there's no Buddhist temple. You might like to use the church bell as bell of mindfulness. Or the wind also can be a bell of mindfulness also. When I was in Montreal 4 or 5 years ago, I gave a talk to the Canadians, and during the talk, the church nearby rang the bell, and the bell lasted very long. It may be 5 minutes, and I stop and breathe like that. And it turns out that these 5 minutes of non-talking is the best of the talk. Not only to me, but to people who came and listened. One year we had a retreat here in Ojai, and when we came, there was a fire all around, and there were a lot of smoke and noises because the helicopters each 5 or 6 minutes came up to the sky and produced that kind of noise. It is not very pleasant, especially for us who have gone through the war, and helicopters means rockets. bombs, things like that. So all of us were disturbed by the noise of the helicopters. And finally, in the afternoon, I asked everyone to make use of the noise. And every time we hear the helicopters, whether we are in a Dharma talk or in walking meditation, we will stop and breathe and say, listen, listen, this wonderful sound brings me back to my true self. A number of us did not believe that we could succeed. But after a few hours, we all realized that it is possible. It was possible to practice with the helicopters. So from that time on, the noise did not bother us anymore. And I think this practice of the bell of mindfulness can be used in your office every time the telephone rings. That is called telephone meditation that many people in Europe and in North America have already practiced, and they love it. You know, every time the phone rings, it creates a sort of vibration in our nervous system. We don't know who is calling and what is the matter. So in order to find out, we rush to the telephone and pick it up. We cannot resist. So telephone meditation consists in staying where you are and breathe, using the ring as a bell of mindfulness, and breathing in, breathing out quietly. We know that we can afford to do that because nobody hung up after the first ring. If they really have something important to tell us, and then they would wait at least 3 or 4, so you can practice. Breathing in, I calm my body. Breathing out, I smile. And when it rings for the second time, you can still do that. And when you breathe and smile for the second time, your smile will be more solid. Try and see. When you breathe for the third time, in and out, you go slowly to the telephone and you pick it up. And there you are with the telephone, smiling and still breathing. And this is for the good of the other person. Not only for yourself, but for the good of the other person. And I'm sure that the quality of the conversation will be better by that kind of practice. It's very simple, but it is very effective. If you are the one who makes the phone call, and then you do like this, you stick on the phone a gata. The original in Vietnamese has only 20 words, but this is the translation roughly. Words can travel thousands of miles, and they are to build up more understanding and mutual acceptance. I vow that my words will be like gems. I vow that my words will be like embroideries. And you stick it to the phone. Every time you want to make a phone call, you put your right hand on it and you breathe. You breathe 2 times because each line is 1 breath. In, out, in. It means you give yourself a chance to be more of yourself. And at the same time, you vow that you will practice right speech, loving speech. So we need to remind ourselves. And then you take that, pick it up, and you make the dial. In France, there are 8 numbers. So there are people who breathe in, breathe out, breathe in, breathe out for 4 more other times. They do it slowly. They don't have to rush. And then when they hear the first ring, well, they know that the other person is still breathing and smiling. So they told themselves, he is breathing, why not me? So we practice breathing at the same time. And we have the chance to do that 3 times, at least. And please imagine that 2 persons on the 2 ends of the line, breathing and smiling. That is beautiful. And you cannot resist have a good conversation in that instance. In Plum Village, where I live, we practice telephone meditation very, very well. Every time the phone rings, everyone stay there and breathe. They enjoy it so much that nobody wants to come to the phone. So if you have you want to make a phone call to Plum Village, remember, and be patient, and breathe until someone come to the phone and answer you. Years ago, a person in America told me that he practiced breathing between phone calls, because sometimes he had to make 10 or more phone calls in a row. And he said that it helps very much.
What is the
problem? On telephone call, words can travel thousands of miles. They are to build up more understanding and mutual acceptance. I vow that words of mine will be like gems. I vow that words of mine will be like embroideries. Mỗi lời là châu ngọc, mỗi lời là gấm theo. By the way, I have also that gata for driving. Like to note. Before I start the car, I know where I go. That's 2 lines. Before I start the car, I know where I go. If the car goes fast, I go fast. That's the gata. It's simple, but it means. Many times we don't really need the car, but we still take it and use it. And that is very bad for our environment. We usually take our car in order to flee from ourselves, to go somewhere, to escape our loneliness, our being alone. We cannot bear it. And therefore, it contributes to the destruction of our environment. Therefore, so when you are about to start the car, you say, before I start the car, I know where I go. If I'm mindful that this is not really important, and then I shall not use the car. I put the key in my pocket, and I go for a walk in meditation. And this is the best. Otherwise, I'm going to my own destruction, the destruction of my own environment. Because a lot of forest land has been destroyed during the past 5 years because of the acid rain. And therefore, the Gata is to remind me of the danger of using too much my car. If the car goes fast, I go fast. We usually think of us as the master and the car only as an instrument. We have a sovereignty over the instruments, but that is not the case in many instances. We know that with a gun, a person becomes much more dangerous. But a person who came and shot the shooting in Stockton, he was a person, but with a gun, with an instrument. A person, an artist with a musical instrument, become much more powerful also. And we know that mankind has become very dangerous because they possess nuclear weapons. They can destroy life on Earth. And we are not sure at all that humans can control the situation now. We are very much subjected to fear. And therefore, we may just destroy ourselves just because of fear. So if the car goes fast, I go fast to my destruction, the instrument. You know that that story, the Zen story about someone riding on a horse and who cannot control the horse. And when someone on the sidewalk yelling at him, asking him where he's going, he said, "I don't know, you ask the horse." It's funny, but it is our situation now, because we have produced enough to destroy 10 times our Earth, but we still continue to make more. So it's not funny, it's the real situation. And when you drive, and if you arrive at a cross-section that has, red light, you might get irritated because the red light is an enemy that prevents you to go very quickly to the place you want to arrive. And if you know how to look at the red light and breathe, the red light becomes a bell of mindfulness. And then if you practice, you look at the red light as a friend, as a Buddha, as a teacher who reminds you that, well, you don't have to go there to be alive. You are alive right now, and you relax. You breathe in and breathe out, calming and smiling. And you transform an irritating moment into a peaceful moment. Because the destination sometimes is very boring, much more boring than the present moment. And we know what is our final destination. Death, the graveyard, the cremation site, And therefore, we should not hurry to go there. We do not want to go into the direction of death. We want to go to where life is. And where life is the present moment. So it's the very, very moment when you drive. So drive peacefully, drive happily. And that is why practicing walking meditation makes you more able to drive. Because when you practice stepping on the beautiful earth like that, you learn to go back to every moment, to the present moment. Every step brings you back to the present moment. And that is why walking like that is not really walking. It's not really for arriving. Walking is like that, is stopping. Stopping to be alive in the present moment. And therefore, walking meditation is one of the most effective way of practice. And if during the day you have moments of 5 or 10 minutes, you might like to practice walking meditation. Going from one building to another, you practice walking meditation. And slow walking will transform you. Will help you to look at things in a different way. And that is why yesterday I urged that you practice only walking meditation here. Going to the toilet, going to the bathroom, to the kitchen, to your tent. Always walking meditation, nothing else. Because if there is no walking meditation, life is lost in this moment. In this moment. For many of us, there is no doubt that the correct practice will bring us joy and healing. And we do not have to wait for a long time to see the effect of the practice. Correct practice can bring you joy and peace, although at a modest level, right after the first hour of practice. There are people who come to Plum Village to practice for 1 year. There are those who practice for a longer time. There are people who do not have any problem at all, but who come for practicing. And I have been in retreats where people are practicing joyously. They don't have problems, but they practice in order not to have problems and to be more joyful in their daily life. In Plum Village where I live, many families come during the season of summer to practice. Most of them are refugees. More than 3/4 of them are refugees. Only 1/4 are non-Vietnamese practitioners. And you know the refugees, they have wounds within themselves. They have left everything. They have suffered death. Many sort of casualties within their families. But when they come to the Plum Village, they come as families. And if you come and visit us during summer, you see that they are very joyful. Everything they do in the day is joyful. Sitting, walking, singing, chanting. Tea meditation, everything, we make it joyful and we practice joyfully. That does not mean that they don't have the seed of suffering in themselves. But because they practice like that, they reduce the sufferings that are in themselves. So Betsy was very correct, right, when she said last night that we can be joyful with the presence of our pain in ourselves. That's true. With the Vietnamese refugees. True that every time we stop talking, we hear the birds and the wind. Thanks to the bell. The non-Vietnamese who come there, there are those who do not have problems, big problems, but there are those who do have problems. But if in a community, there are many who have a balance within themselves, and who can show joy and share joy with other people, that is a healthy community, a community where people can profit the most. But if a community has only most of the people who practice there are having big pains in themselves, so that is difficult. It looks more like a hospital than a practice center. And the best thing is to have the majority who practice to increase their joy and their happiness, and just a very small minority to come for healing the big pain within themselves. So this is true with her retreats. There are many retreats where people are more joyful, like the one we just had in Santa Barbara. That is a retreat for children. And I enjoy it very much. It is exactly like in medicine, there is the practice to prevent pain and suffering to arise, and there is the practice to heal the pain, the suffering that is already existing. And it is clear that when you have some balance in yourself, and that you are not so much dominated by your pain, the practice will be much easier. That is why I always say that don't wait until the situation gets bad in order to begin the practice. Practice right away when you do not have many problems. The practice of massage is of the same. You don't have problems, but if you practice massage to help your blood to circulate well, and then you will prevent many diseases that can happen to you. So this is the same thing. The practice of walking, of smiling, of drinking, the practice of relaxation, of being in touch with the wonders of life, is very important. And I tell you an example. One day we lost a friend in Plum Village. His name is Monsieur Mounier. He's a very wonderful person. He's one of the Frenchmen, one of the person that I consider to be one of the best friends we have in France. He brings us a lot of joy. He taught us how to cultivate the land in the area. Every time he appears, well, we find joy and confidence. And he's busy, but he always takes 5 minutes to come and have a cup of tea with us. And spending 5 minutes with him is a joy, a real joy. And one day we learned that he had he died because of a heart attack. And that gave all of us a shock. Now, all of us had already realized that he is a precious gift to us. But all of us regretted that we did not profit the maximum from him. You know, that is our common feeling when we lose a friend, someone that is dear to us. And that day we came together and discussed how to help his family. And then we chanted the Heart Sutra for him. And we all sit down and think and speak of him as a gift. And then I said that, well, we usually do not cherish what we have enough in the present moment. We wait until we lose them in order to cry, to suffer. So we should learn a very hard lesson about the loss of our friend. And that afternoon, many permanent residents in Plum Village asked the permission to go back and see their father, mother, their family. I understood, so I urged them to go. Some went to Holland, some went to Switzerland, and so on. That night, I could not sleep. It was painful to lose a friend like that, so the pain was gripping at my heart, and I could not sleep. I said that I have to sleep because I have things to do tomorrow. So the way I did it is to invite the three Siddhas that I had planted 10 years ago in my garden to come with me, and I contemplate these Siddhas, and I breathe on them. Now they are very high, and already it's a species called Siddhis Deodara in Latin. And during my walking meditation, I used to stop and come and hug them with a lot of awareness. Hugging a tree, looking up at the green, and breathe in, breathe out mindfully. And to me, they responded to my hugging and breathing. I feel always happy hugging these three Siddhas. If you have not tried, then please try. And then after that, I invited the little bamboo to come. Little bamboo, her name is Betuk. She was only six. She's a very cute little girl who come to Plum Village very often. She was born in Bordeaux. And she has she masters Vietnamese and French. When she comes to Plum Village, she only speaks Vietnamese, and she behaves exactly like a Vietnamese little girl. And I did not know that she has another capacity of being with the French children. So one day, there were several French children came, and she found herself very at ease like a fish in the water. She play with them, she talk French, and she behave exactly like a French girl. And she began plum villages at the age of 2.5. And she's so cute that all the children all want to hold her. So she did not have much occasion to walk on the soil of Plum Village. And so I invited her back to my consciousness. I was breathing, smiling with the image of little bamboo when I felt asleep. So the practice that night is to use an image that is refreshing, that is healing, in order to counterbalance the image of death and of suffering. And I dwell firmly on this new image, and I practice breathing and smiling on it. And the result is that I could sleep during that night. And that is what everyone can do. If you live mindfully, and if you could get in touch with the wonderful things in our daily life, like that tree or that little girl or many other things, and then you have a kind of reserve within ourselves for the sake of difficult moments. And therefore, the practice, in order to be in touch with life in each moment, is very important. They counterbalance the suffering which is in us. The sky, the moon, the stars, the trees, the ocean, the snow, they belong to all of us, and we have equal opportunity to enjoy them. But there are those who have more chance, because they have the capacity of getting in touch. And it needs a little bit of practice in order to not to overlook.